With the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Beis Amid Beis, and of course the Daf for today is Tzadi Gimel Amid Aleph. Hamotzi Kikar L'Shus Rabim Chayev. Okay, this is just an introduction to what's coming later in the Mishnah. Hamotzi Shnayim, two people together carried a loaf, and each one could have done it himself, is then Pturim. And that's called Zeyachol v'zeyachol, and the Tanoim, with the exception of Rabbi Meir that we'll see later, hold that he's potter. Lo yachol echad lo tzio. Here's a case of Zeyni yachol v'zeyni yachol v'otziu shnayim is chayovim. So in the case of Zeyni yachol v'zeyni yachol, even Rabbi Yehuda we'll see agrees with Rabbi Meir, and you are chayav. Rav Shimon poter. Rav Shimon says in all cases you're poter, whether it's ze yachol v'ze yachol or ze eino yachol v'ze eino yachol. Om Rav Yehuda Marav v'yamri lo Om Rabaye v'yamri lo b'masnisa tana. So we're talking about Shnayim Shasu. And this Brisa is going to introduce the Shita of Rabbi Meir, which we didn't see in the Mishnah. Zeyachol v'zeyachol. And we said until now that you're potter in this case, but Rabbi Meir Mechayev. So Rabbi Meir never accepted this category of Ptur called Shnayim Shasu, and the Gemara is going to explain why. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, potrim. Not only does Rabbi Shimon potter, because he's going to potter in all cases, even in Zeyni Yochel v'Zeyni Yochel, but in this case, which Zey Yochel v'Zey Yochel, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's potter. Whereas in the next case, Zeyni Yochel v'Zeyni Yochel, where we need the Shituf Pula, we need the two partners together to achieve this malacha, the object, for example, is too heavy for one person to carry. So we need both of them to carry it together. Is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Mechayvim, Rabbi Shimon Poter. It means that even Rabbi Yehuda, who has the ptur of Ze'eno Yochel V'Ze'eno Yochel, even Rabbi Yehudu has the ptur of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, when it's a kind of strange situation where they engineered the Hotzah as a partnership, even though each one individually could have achieved the Hotzah on his own, that's a ptur of Shnayim Shasu. But in the case where they need each other, they're interdependent, and that's called Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, Rabbi Yehudu agrees to Rabbi Meir that he's Chayev. And again, it's very simple here, because Rabbi Meir always says that you're chayev. Even in the case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, Rabbi Yehuda has a ptur of Shnayim Shasu im Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, but im Ze'eino Yochel, where it's the most natural and necessary thing, they're interdependent, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Meir that you're chayev. Rabbi Shimon has an absolute ptur of Shnayim Shasu, and that's going to apply even in a case of Zeyni Yochel v'Zeyni Yochel. However, there's one case where everybody agrees to Yechayev, and that's the case of Zey Yochel v'Zeyni Yochel. So one of them could do it on his own. He gets some help from his friend. His friend is helping him out. He's being Mesayea, but his friend couldn't do it on his own. Diriya Kol Chayev. Even Rav Shim would agree that Yechayev in this case. And the Gemara is going to take up the question, which of the two is chayev? And a simple pshat would be that the one who's yachol is chayev, because the misayeah, we're going to have a principle, and that's the main subject for today's shiur, is misayeah ein bo mamish. Tanya nami hochi. We also have a braisa to support this. Hamotzi kikar l'shus harabim chayev. Okay, that's always an introduction. Hotziu shnayim. Rabbi Meir machayev. And as we said before, Rabbi Meir has an absolute chiyuv. He doesn't accept the p'tur of Shnayim Shasu. He doesn't even have the drush, as we'll see. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo yachal echad lo tziyavotziru shnayim chayavim. I'm going to agree, says Rabbi Yehuda to Rabbi Meir, in the case where each one is dependent upon the other one. And it's the most natural thing in the world. We can anticipate that if they want to achieve this hotza, they have to do it together as a partnership. However, in lav, let's say in the case with Zeinu Yochel, Zeinu Yochel, each one could not have achieved or carried the weight himself, is then pturim. No, I'm sorry, just the opposite. If each one, again, if they couldn't achieve it together, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees that the partnership, as we said before, is the most natural and necessary thing in Yechayim. But in a case with Zeyachol, Vizeyachol, where each one independently could have achieved the Hotzah, and like in a very strange, odd way, they picked it up together, is Pturim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Here's where we have a Ptur of Shnayim Shasu. So Rabbi Yehuda's Ptur is going to apply to a case of Zeyachol Vizeyachol. Rabbi Shimon Poter, Rabbi Shimon says that even in the case of Ze'enu Yachol, Vize'enu Yachol, where, as we said before, it's the most natural thing for them to do it together as a buddy system, nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon has the more extreme, all-inclusive tour of Shnayim Shasu. Minani Mili, where can we find a source in the Torah for each one of these shitas respectively? The Torah Rabbana we learned in Ebraisa. Be'asosa. So we're now in Vayikra, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Chav Zayin, and this is the introduction to Achiv Chatas. It says, V'im nefesh achas techeta b'shkaga miyama oretz basosa achas mimitz Hashem asher lo teyasena. Very long, somewhat verbose pasuk. And the Braisa says, basosa, which means he did the entire melacha. Ha'oses kula v'lo ose es miktsasa. So what would be a case where he didn't do the entire melacha? Shnayim shayu ochzim b'malgez. Two are holding a pitchfork. V'logzim, that's the verb of malgez. They were digging into the produce, that as you do with a pitchfork, but they did it two together, or alternatively, bekarkar, they were doing, holding on to a pointed rod, vishovtim, arranging the threads of the shasi, bekulmas, two people holding on to a quill, because when they write together, or bekana, two people holding on to a reed, votziu lushusaravim, clearly each one could have done it himself. Is Yochel, I might think, Yechayovim? After all, they achieved the Moloch, they should be Chayev, Talmud Lomer, Basosa, Hoses Kula, Velo, Hose Es Miktsasa. So let's assume, for argument's sake, that the Braisa is addressing a case where Ze Yochel, Vize Yochel, which is pretty clear, for example, in the case of the Kulmus, or in the Karkar. I mean, these are not such heavy items. And this would support the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda has the p'tur of Shnayim Shasu in a case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol. And here we turn to Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Aleph, the Omud for today, the Daf for today, the Igul Shel Dvela, two people holding on to something that's more heavy. So now we have a case of Ze'eno Yochav, Ze'eno Yochav, Otziu Lishus Arabim, where they need their Shituf Pula, their partnership. Is another alternative is Bekorah, they're holding on to a very heavy beam, Otziu together, Bishus Arabim, is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo yachal echad lo tzio v'yotziu shnayim. They need each other together. They're interdependent, as we said, chayavim. V'im lav, if each one could have achieved this hotza on his own, pturim. That's the ptur of zeyachal v'zeyachal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, derived from basosah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afal Pishalo Yachal Echadlo Tzio, even though they depend upon each other, it's so natural for them to partner together, nevertheless, Hotziu Shnaim Pturim. Lekach Nemer Baso Sa, Yachid Shaso Chayav, Shnaim Shaso Asu Pturim. So this is the most extreme application of the Ptur of Shnaim Shasu in Rabbi Shimon's perspective. And even in the case of Ze'eno Yochel, Ze'eno Yochel, Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Rabbi Meir that Yechai, Rabbi Shimon says, Yipot. B'maiko Miflugi, B'hai Kro, there's a machlokas here about how to interpret this pasuk in Perek Dalid of Sefer Vayikra, Pasuk Chav Zayin. And the pasuk says, V'yim nefesh achas techeto b'shkaga me'am ha'oretz. And the rest of the pasuk is, ba'asosa achas mi'mitzos Hashem ha'shalot ha'sena. And this pasuk introduces the chiyuv chatos for a person who violates a negative commandment inadvertently, meaning b'shogeg. And we're going to start by understanding that there are three different superfluous words in this pasuk, and that's going to give us three different drashos. So it says the following: ba'asosa. Okay, Rabbi Shimon Savar Tlosa Miute Ksive. So we have three extra psukim here, and each one is coming as an exclusion, as a mute. Number one, it says Nefesh Techta. And the Torah obviously is coming to exclude something here, because it didn't have to say Nefesh Techta. Number two, it says achas techta. It says nefesh achas techta. So we have another extra pasuk. And then we have basosa techta. Now again, it doesn't say the word techta three times. But what this Rabbi Shimon is trying to point out, he's sort of dramatizing it, is that you have three different words that all describe techta, that all describe the violation, the transgression. One is nefesh techta, and the other is achas techta, and the third is basosa techta. So he uses the word techta to prove, to illustrate, that there are three ribuyim here, or we should say actually mi'utim, three exclusions. Now, why do we need three exclusions? So Rav Shimon starts with a basic miut, which has a particular relevance to Meleches Hotzah, to carrying, and he calls it Chad. The first one is Lim'uti Ze'oker V'Zeminiach. Now what's going on over here is that according to Rav Shimon, the Torah with three miutim is restricting and limiting the Chiyuv Chatos based on the fact that you as an individual, although you certainly participated and contributed to a malacha, but you didn't do it yourself. So in the case of Hotzah, you started the Meleches Hotzah. For example, let's say you were the Ani and you're standing out in the Rishus HaRabim. You pick up an object in Rishus HaRabim, you put your hand into the Rishus HaYachid, you put it, and instead of putting it down in Rishus HaYachid, the Baal HaBayis, who is now in the Rishus HaYachid, he grabs it from you. So you did the Akira, he did the Anacha. And Meleches Hotzah requires a one-man show that incorporates both the Akira and the Hanocha. So here the Akira was done by one person, the Hanocha by another person. They're both potter. Neither one of them implemented a complete Malacha. Now, it's a little bit of a question here as to why Rabbi Shimon feels, and we're going to see it also again and again, Rabbi Yehuda is going to reiterate this soon, that you need an exclusion for the case where one did the Akira and the other did the Anocha. That would seem to be almost obvious based on the premise that Melechus Otsah is made up of those three parts, picking it up and then putting it down, with carrying it in the middle. But perhaps we could have had an idea, if not for this mute, that if Reuven did both the Akira and the Havaras Reshuyos, meaning he also took the object and by virtue of his effort it entered into the Rishus HaRabim, maybe that would be enough. Two-thirds, shall we say. In any event, that's the first miut. Now we have a second miut. Chad, number two, is Lemu'ute Zeyachol V'Zeyachol. And what this means is that you have two people, each one has the power and the ability to achieve the malach on his own, independently. So they did it in a very strange way. Like you have a small loaf of bread, but instead of carrying it single-handedly, he says to his buddy, let's carry it together. You hold that part of the bread, I'll hold this part of the loaf of bread. So that's called Shnayim Shasuhu. And that's, shall we say, a very profound case of Shnayim Shasu, because they did the malacha in a very strange way. V'chad, now we have the third case, and this is, in a sense, the most radical application of the p'tur, the exemption of Shnayim Shasu. L'me'utei zayin yachol v'zayin yachol. I mean, that's absolutely natural. You know, you have two people who don't have the power to move this object, to transport it from one rishus to the other. They need each other. They're interdependent. And you would think in that case that they both are equally responsible for the malacha. But we're holding now like Reb Shimon, and Reb Shimon has a third miut to exclude even this case. This is a case which only Reb Shimon says you're potter on. The other Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, they're going to hold that you're chayiv in this case, because how did you achieve your goal of the malacha? You invited your friend to participate. You had no choice in the matter. You were absolutely dependent upon him. But nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon has a third miut to potter you up, even in the case of Zeinu Yochel v'Zeinu Yochel. Rabbi Yehuda, Chad l'm'utei ze'oker v'zemeniach. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that the first miut, like Rabbi Shimon had established before him, is coming to exclude a hotzah where one did the akira, the other did anocha. Chad number two is lemute ze yachol vize yachol. Right, that's the less radical p'tur of Shnayim Shasu, because again, this was a very strange, odd kind of hotzah. There was no need for Reuven to ask Shimon to participate in his hotzah. You know, they, in a sense, you know, circumvented the law by setting up a hotzah between the two of them. Now, at this point, Rabbi Yehuda has to address the question of the third miut. And Rabbi Shimon, before Rabbi Yehuda, had expanded the scope of the p'tur of Shnayim Shasu to a case of Zeinu Yochel v'Zeinu Yochel, where, as we said, it was so natural for them to join forces as a partnership. They were interdependent. And nevertheless, since we have a third miut, says Reb Shimon, he insists that that case is also included in the p'tur of Shnayim Shasu. What's Rabbi Yehuda going to say? Rabbi Yehuda actually is of the opinion that in the case of Zeinu Yochel v'Zeinu Yochel, which naturally they have to create this hotzah together as a joint effort, Yochayim. So what does he do with the third miut? And the answer is Chad lemute yochid shasa'a behoras bezdin. The Torah tells us that if the High Court of Israel, the Sanhedrin Agdola, made an error in their ruling, so let's say, for example, they said that under certain conditions you're allowed to eat chalef, which is an isur kares, and they made a mistake. It was based on what they thought the application of the isur kares in the case of chalev is concerned. And they made a mistake. They issued their ruling, and the people relied on their ruling. Now, On the one hand, the person who relied on that ruling and went ahead to need chalev, he's a classic shogeg. He is inadvertently a transgressor of the iser kares of chalev, achilas chalev. But on the other hand, this is a very unusual case because he's not really a shogeg. He's amazed. He knows he's eating chalev, but he thinks that that chalev is mutter. But why? Because he got the ruling from Beis Din HaGadol. Again, they ruled in error, but nevertheless, he relied on them. So you might think that he's chayav a korban chatos because, after all, he did violate an iser chelev b'shogeg. Kamash malon, for this I have a third miut, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to tell me that he's not going to be chayav a chatos, because this is the case of Yachid She'os al pi horas bezd. And that's more like an onus situation. It's almost like circumstances beyond his control. He had every reason to believe that what he was doing was mut. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda uses that third miut to exclude a chatos in the case of Yochid Shasob Aras Bez, then we have two questions to ask. Number one, what is Rabbi Yehuda going to tell me about the third case of Rabbi Shimon that was excluded on the Shnayim Shasu, namely the case of Zeina Yochel, Vizeina Yochel? And apparently Rabbi Yehuda is going to say in that case Yechayev, because as we said before, it's the most natural thing for the two of them to implement the Hotzah together, each one working in tandem with the other one to help the other one. Now we have question number two. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda used the third miut, not for the case of Ze'enu Yochel, V'Ze'enu Yochel, but rather for the case of Yochid Shasob Aras Bezdin, then what would Rabbi Shimon do with that case? Meaning, what would his halachic point of view be? So the Gemara and the Braisa continues and says, Rabbi Shimon, he holds that Yochid Shasob Aras Bezdin Chayav, that he actually does have a chiyuv chatos. Now, there is such a p'tur when the tzibur, the entire congregation, follows the ruling, mistakenly follows the ruling of a horas bezin be'era. That's already called parahelim dover shel tzibur. That's a special parasha where one carbon is brought on behalf of the entire tzibur. But as far as an individual, if he's the only one who implemented this mistake, this error, and violated the chiyuv of, for example, achilas chelev b'shogeg, so Rav Shimon says he's chayev. Why? Because he was a shogeg. He relied on Bezdin, but Rav Shimon doesn't have that third pasuk for an exclusion, for a miut to exclude the case of Yochid Shasob Aras Bezdin. Rabbi Shimon has already used up that third miut for the case of Zeinu Yochel v'Zeinu Yochel. Rabbi Meir. Now Rabbi Meir holds that in all cases Yochayev in Shnayim Shasua, and apparently Rabbi Meir is going to reject these drashos and these ribuyim, these miutim, and he's going to claim that the pasuk is not superfluous. He doesn't have the green light to exclude these cases. And therefore, the Braisa says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Miksiv nefesh techta, achas techta, basosa techta. You know, it's very nice that you dramatize the ribuyim by repeating the word techta three times over. Well, it doesn't say techta three times over. The pasuk actually mentions techta only once. And the word techta is in place. In nefesh achas techta b'shkaga, it only says it once. So therefore, Rabbi Meir drops one of the three miutim. In other words, although he admits that the word basosa is superfluous, why did the Torah have to say basosa? But as far as the first part of the pasuk, nefesh achas techta b'shkaga, he reads it as if there were only one extra word in the pasuk. It didn't have to say nefesh achas techta. It could have said nefesh techta. And then we didn't need the word basosa. So Rabbi Meir basically has two miyutim. What is he going to do with these two miyutim? Trei miyutei ksive. Chad lemutei ze oker v'ze meniach. So he uses it for a hotzah. To establish that in hotzah, you're only going to be chayev if you have one individual who does both the akira and the anocha. And chad lemutei yochid shasov oros bezdin. He's now on the same turf as Rabbi Yehuda, and he needs a pasuk for the case of Oras Bezdin. And if that be the case, he has no pasuk whatsoever to exclude Shnayim Shasu. And therefore, in the case of Shnayim Shasu, straight across the board, whether it's a case which is a little bit more sophisticated, and that's the unique sheet of Rabbi Shimon, in a case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, or in the case of Zeina Yochel v'Zeina Yochel, which is a more a logical position that Rabbi Yehuda took already, and Rabbi Meir is going to agree that Yechayev, because there it's natural that they both would implement this malacha together. Neither one could achieve it together. You know, the box is too heavy for any one of them to carry. In that case, they're both Chayev. But Rabbi Meir took it one step further. Since he doesn't have a miyut, because he uses the miyutim for hotzah in a very unique way, oker v'miniach, he uses it for Oras Bezdin. Therefore, he's going to argue that we're going to suspend, or shall I say, invalidate the principle or the p'tur of Shnayim Shasu, even in the case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, where we almost had a natural, intuitive sense that he should be potur. But we still needed a mute, because even though each one could have done it on his own, but each one actually implemented the malacha. And therefore they're both chayev. And that's the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Omar Mar, ze yochol v'ze eino yochol, divrei akol chayev. If one of them could achieve the malacha on his own, the other could not, everybody agrees that chayev. So Gemara says, Hai minayu mechayev. Which one of the two is going to be chayev? Let's try to analyze the Gemara's question for a moment. On the one hand, intuitively, we would have certainly said Zeyachol, he should be chayev, because not only could he have done the malach himself, he actually did the malach. The Eino Yachol, on the other hand, should be potter, because on his own, he couldn't have possibly achieved the malach. Now there's another logic to say the following, that the Zeyachol, he's not going to be chayev because he, in a natural sense, he should have done it himself. He did it in a very unusual, strange way, you know, back of the hand kind of way, in which he relied on the aid of his friend, the assistance of his friend. However, the one who couldn't have done it himself, he, in a natural kind of way, had no choice. He was dependent upon his friend, and therefore his implementation of the malacha was a perfect one. So the Gemara quotes two opinions here. Amar Rav Chisda, ze sheyachol, de'i ze she'eino yachol, ma'ika avid. He says the intuitive logic, that's the position of Rav Chisda, that the one who's eino yachol, I mean, he couldn't have done this malacha. How could you be mechayev for something where he couldn't have done the malacha? However, the one who could have done the malacha himself, forget about the other guy. You know, the other guy is irrelevant. You know, he's transparent. Just drop him, ignore him, because Zeyachol could have done the malacha on his own, and he actually did the malacha. He's the one who achieved the malacha. He had all the capability of doing so, and therefore he should be chayev. The only point I want to make here in Rav Chisda, which should bother us a little bit, is that we said that Rabbi Yehuda, who was the middle shita, agrees that you're chayev in the case of Zeyin and Yochel. So if neither of them could have achieved the malacha independently, then in that case, they work as a partnership and they're both chayev. So that Rav Chisda's language is a little bit, it irritates the ear a bit when he says, the e zeh, she'eino yochel, my kovit. You know, what's your havamina to say that the one who couldn't have done it on his own should be chayev? Well, that's not really so. We have a precedent, and this is even Rabbi Yehuda. Forget about Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir doesn't even accept the whole principle of Shnayim Shasu Potter. But at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, accept the case of Zeyachol V'Zeyachol, because that was a strange kind of situation. Why did you invite your friend to partner with you when you could have carried the loaf by yourself? But Rabbi Yehuda agrees that there is a chiyuv in the case of ze'en yachol ve'ze'en yachol, even though each one of them independently did not have the ability to achieve this malach. He was dependent upon his friend to achieve the malach. And nevertheless, he's chayav according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that the language of Rav Chizda here, of the e ze'eno yachol maika ovid. What do you mean maika ovid? We already have a precedent for the maika ovid. And that's the case of ze eno yachol v'ze eno yachol, where Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Rabbi Meir that they're both chayav. So you see that even someone who's eno yachol and he has to invite his friend and rely on his friend's assistance, nevertheless he's chayav. Obviously, Rav Chizda would argue, okay, there you can say that the two people together achieve the malacha. In other words, if Shimon couldn't have done it on his own, so then he needs Reuven. Reuven couldn't have done it on his own. He did Shimon. Together they did the malacha. Mashen came here to say that Shimon should be chayv when he couldn't have done it on his own, when Reuven could have done it on his own. So the malacha really was done by Reuven. So then my ka'avid, we can turn to Shimon and put him in the category of what did he do? Amalei Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna disagrees. And he says, the ka'messiah v'hadeh. You know why it makes sense that Shimon, who, even though he was Eino Yachol, should be liable here, is because he is a Messiah. His assistance ultimately made this action a lot easier. Now again, that doesn't explain why Reuven, who could have done it on his own, is going to be Potter. But at least we know, in the framework of Rav Nuna, that Shimon, who's an Eino Yachol, is really contributing here because he's, easing the burden of Reuven, even though Reuven could have done it on his own. But very often, even though you could do something on your own, you ask for assistance from someone else to make it a lot easier. And therefore, the one who is Messiah, the one who offered his assistance, he's not such a Tzadik Gomor. He actually made this Malach a lot easier to be implemented. Amalei, so Rav Chizda responds to Rav Hamnuna, and he says, Messiah ein bo mamish. Now those four words, Messiah ein bo mamish, are the subject of our entire shiur for today. So we better get it down straight. And what it means is that in halacha, the fact that you assist, that's nothing. You know, in basketball, I don't know if you know the rules, but you get certain points and credit for being for an assist, what's called. And there are many other sports, you know, if I shoot the puck to you and you get it into the net, so in hockey also I get credit for an assistance. But that's only behind the scenes. In halacha, Rav Chizda insists, Misayeya ein bo mamish, that although, you know, we're not going to give you, shishi, you know, we're not going to give you an aliyah for being messiah to someone for a transgression, but nevertheless, we cannot hold you liable for that because you were only a messiah. You only offered your assistance. Somebody else actually carried the ball, so to speak. And now the Gemara is going to try to find proof after proof after proof to support Rav Chizda that Messiah ain bo mamish. And most of the proofs are going to come from the laws of Zav. So we'll say a few words about the laws of Zav. And I just want to say by introduction, with all the different proofs that the Gemara is going to deduce to support Messiah ain bo mamish, some of them are going to be rejected, but most of them will actually be accepted. So this is a famous principle called Messiah ein bo mamish. Now, in the case of a Zav, who had re'ios from a seminal emission that were somewhat unusual, to say the least, his status is that of an av hatumah, which means that if someone comes in contact with him, direct contact, that person or that object gets the status of a Rishon Lutuma.
Now, a Rishon L'Tuma is down one madrig because a Rishon L'Tuma cannot convey Tuma neither to a person or to Kalim. A Rishon L'Tuma has special significance in terms of Truma and so forth and so on. However, there is one case in which the Zav could actually convey the status of an Ava Tuma, and that's called Medris HaZav, which means that if the object or the person was carrying the Zav and the full weight of the Zav was upon that person's shoulders, shall we say, or on a pillow or a mattress on the ground, then that object or that person now has the highest level of Tumah, not that of a Rishon L'Tumah, but even a higher level of Tumah such that he can convey Tumah to another person or to Caleb. So we're talking today, and we're quoting a Mishnah in Masechta Zavim about Medris Tuma. Okay, so you have the weight of the Zav on top of a person, on top of an animal, on top of an object, whatever it might be, and that's going to generate the highest level of Tuma, and that's called Medris Tuma. Now, when we think about objects, for example, that carry the weight of the Zav, you could always ask, well, you know, is it necessary to have, let's say if there are two objects or four objects that are carrying a Zav, do we need all four of them? Maybe one of them is sort of unnecessary and it's only misayeh. It only sort of lightens the burden and makes it easier to carry the weight of the Zav. But the weight of the Zav is really being carried by X and not by Y. So the Mishnah actually addresses this question. Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derav Afanana Mitnina. I'm going to derive from a Mishnah in Zavim this principle of Mesayeh Ein Bo Mamish. Hayoshev Al Gabi Amita. Now every bed has four legs to it. And if the Zav sits down on the bed, then we're talking about Tumas Medrash. But now each one of the four legs of this bed was cushioned by, let's call it a pillow, or the Gemara calls it the Mishnah itself calls it a talus, a garment. So you have a garment that is placed under each one, four garments, under four legs of a bed, and now the Zav sleeps on the bed, or sits on the bed. So the Mishnah says, "Hayoshev al amito, gabi amito, v'arba talisos tachas ragle amito." He's got four pillows or shawls, if you want to call it that, under the four legs of the bed. Tmeos, all four shawls are considered holding up the weight of the zav, and therefore they contract tumas medris. Why? There's no such thing as a bed that could stand on three legs. So that each one of the four legs is absolutely critical, without which there would be no way that the Zav's weight could be held up. There's no such thing as a three-legged bed. We're going to see later when we talk about a horse, that a horse sometimes picks up one of its legs. So when the Zav is sitting with his weight on the horse, it's not really so that all four legs are really carrying his weight. And therefore, if you have objects under each one of the four legs of the horse, and the Zav is sitting on the horse, we're not sure, you know, which one of the four should be excluded from Tumah. But we'll get to that soon. Rabbi Shimon Metayer. This is Rabbi Shimon's Shita, that whenever you have X number of individuals, or in this case objects, that are gathering together, joining forces in order to achieve a goal, in this case to carry the weight of the Zav, they're all potter. Because Rabbi Shimon, if you remember, had the extreme application of the principle of Shnayim Shasua. And just like in the case where you have two people carrying a beam, and it was even a case of Zeh Eino Yochel, Vezeh Eino Yochel, which we said was absolutely natural that we have to work in tandem because each one independently could not carry the beam or the or whatever it was. Nevertheless, there are, according to Rav Shimon, they're all potur. So here also, even though each leg is absolutely necessary, but you cannot pinpoint one single leg of the bed that was responsible for supporting the weight of the zaf, and therefore all of them are potur.
Rabbi
Berzon. Yes.
Is there any significance to the word metahir as opposed to potter?
Oh, well, again, the word metahir here is in a Mishnah in Zovim. The Mishnah in Zovim is not talking about Shabbos. It's only Rav Zvid who's making the analogy between the Mishnah of Zovim as to whether or not these shawls that are underneath the four legs of the bed that the Zav is sitting on, whether these shawls are tar or tameh. No interest here in Chiyuv HaPtur. It's only Rav Zvid who wants to derive conclusions, as we'll soon see from this Mishnah in Zavim, that the one who's going to say Chayav is going to hold that Misayeya, I'm sorry, the one who says Tameh is going to hold Misayeya Yesh Bo Mamish, the one who says Tar is going to say Misayeya Ein Bo Mamish, and that's going to have an impact on a Malach on Shabbos that was done by many people.
Thank you.
Hayarochev Al Gabi Behema. The Mishnah continues with the case of a Zav who's riding an animal. The Arba Talisos Tachas Ragle Habehema. So there are four shawls under each one of the four legs of the animal. Tahoros. Wow. This is pretty radical. All four shawls remain Tahoros. And why is that? Mipneshi Yechola Lamod Al Sholosh. Because in the case of an animal, we'll see which animal, but let's talk about a horse, for example. A horse can lift up one of its legs and still hold the weight of the, in this case, the Zav, who's sitting on top of the horse. Now, if that be the case, which one of the four legs of the horse is unnecessary, is called a Misayea, he's just adding assistance? We don't know. There's no way you can single out one of the four legs. But in any event, leave that question in abeyance. We'll come back to it in Mishnah later. Vamai. Now, Rav Zvid analyzes this Mishnah. And he says, why are all these shawls tahoros? Hakim Sayyeh Bahari Adodi. Even if you'll say that the animal could have lifted up one of its legs and still carried the weight, but nevertheless, it certainly each leg certainly contributes and makes it a lighter burden. Lav mishum, is it not that we have to conclude the amrina we hold misayeh ein bo mamish? Here's the support for Rav Chisda. Om Rav Yehuda mi diskarta liola meimelucha misayeh yesh bo mamish. In this Mishnah, I'm going to tell you that if we don't know which of the four legs was, so to speak, superfluous, if you follow, was only in the category of assisting, then all four shawls are going to be tmeos, because misayeh yesh bo mamish. However, what's the case in the Mishnah? The akra la legamre, that the animal is actually lifting up one of its four legs. So therefore, what the Mishnah is saying is that since the animal is lifting up one of its four legs, then the Mishnah considers that the talisos, which are underneath the legs of the animal, he says that those shawls, each particular shawl, if you single it out, might not be bearing the weight of the zav. Just one second, let me just add something here. Shiny Hocha, the Okra Lola Gamre, right? The Okra Lola Gamre, and the animal raises one of its legs, so that leg is not a Messiah. Okay? Now, what about the other three shawls? Just one second. The beer here tells me that while an animal walks, and again we're going to soon see this is typical of horses, then it picks up one leg. That's derech habeima lakar balichos ha'achas miragleh. It picks up one lick. And now the horse is really standing on three out of its four licks. And at this point in time, the one leg that it picks up, we don't know which leg it is, that leg is not in the picture at all. It's not carrying the zav. Okay, so now we can always say about each one of the four legs that although it's contributing to carrying the weight of the person, but nevertheless, it's not doing so bekvius. Kol achas min haraglayim nechsheves kirevius. He says that each one of the four legs of the horses is contributing, let's say, 1/4 of the weight. But theoretically, any one of these four would... any one of these four might be the one that's, at this particular moment, lifted, one of these four legs is lifted up. So, basically, according to Rabbi Yehuda Midiskratia, what we're saying is that each one of the legs is a Messiah, and that in and of itself would be enough to consider it Yesh Bo Mamish as if it is Tame Betumas Medris. But since, as the animal walks, one of the four is not even a Messiah, therefore we never know on any given occasion which of the four legs is the Messiah. Right, because it could be possible, you know, point to one of the legs, and I'm going to say, well, maybe at that moment in time, that leg was up in the air. So we don't know. So we're really in a suffix situation. So the Gemara says the following. The kevan dezimnin akra ha. The animal changes its mind, so to speak, or its leg, I should say, every few minutes. Sometimes it's going to pick up this leg. Zimnin diakra ha, sometimes it's going to pick up a different leg. So we never know which of the four legs at any particular moment in time is the one that is lifted up and is not in any way contributing to carrying the weight. So the Gemara says, Lehevi, I don't understand, Rabbi Yehuda. If your analysis is correct, it should be like the din of a Zav HaMishapech. Now, a Zav HaMishapech is going to be a case where we're not sure where the Zav placed his weight. He was rolling over a bed. And what we're going to try to do now is quote a Mishnah in Zavim to prove that in a case where we don't know which one is bearing the weight of the Zav, we're going to have to be metame all of them. Not like Rabbi Yehuda Midisker, who says that since we don't know which of the four legs was lifted up, therefore we're going to metare all of them. Milos nan, don't we have a Mishnah? Zav shaya mutal al chamisha safsolim o al chamesh fundos. So we have the Reisha of this Mishnah and the Sefer of this Mishnah. Okay? So what's the Reisha of the Mishnah? This first case is of Zav, who is lying on five different benches, five different money belts. They used to have very heavy, thick money belts, and they would use it sometimes as a bimkom, as a replacement for a mattress. Li'arkon, if he's lying across the length of this of these benches, t'meim, right, then we know that his weight is weighing down each one of these benches, and therefore they're all t'meim. L'rachban, but if he's lying across the width, then tahorim. Right, because if he's lying across the width, then There's not one single bench that at any time supported most of his weight. Well, but this, the real part of the Mishnah that interests us is the Seif of the Mishnah. Yoshein, let's say the Zav was sleeping, and he's laying across the these various benches that are put under his body. And Safek Mishapech Aleihem. And now we're not sure, perhaps he shifted his body around while he was sleeping in such a way that each one of these benches at some point was actually carrying his weight. And the Mishnah says, Tmeim. They're all Tamei. So therefore, getting back to the case of Rabbi Yehuda, right? If you have one leg of the animal that went up, we don't know which leg it is, then we're going to have to be metame all of them. Why? Because it could very well be that this was the leg that was carrying, that, you know, that the weight of the rider, you know, on the horse. El Olav. So therefore we have no choice to explain the Mishnah Zavim, unless we assume Mishum Damrina and Misayeh Ein Bo Mamish, that even though Mitzad Sufik, I would have to assume that any one of these four legs was being used to carry, but since no single leg is singly responsible for carrying the weight of the rider, each one is contributing and being assisted by the other one of the legs, and even though it's a case of Zayin Yochel v'Zayin Yochel, nevertheless, Ein Bo Mamish, and this is going to support Rav Chisda. Okay. Now, we have another Mishnah in Zavim, which also is going to support Rav Chisda. Amar HaPapi Mishmei D'Rav HaFanan Nami Tanina. I also have a proof from a Mishnah in Zavim to support Rav Papa, that Messiah Ein Bo Mamish, and now we're on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis. Rabbi Yossi Omer Hasus Mitame Al Yodov V'Chamor Al Raglov. Shemish Enes Hasus Al Yodov V'Chamor Al Raglov. Now, how the Gemara knows this is beyond my comprehension, but the Gemara knows that an animal has four legs and hind legs, and in the case of a sus, the sus, right, the sus rests its weight on the forelegs, and it will only be able to carry something on its back if the forelegs are firmly rooted in the ground. So it may pick up one of its hind legs. And in the case of a chamor, of a donkey, it's just the opposite. The opposite, the animal leans all its weight on its hind legs, and a donkey might pick up one of its forelegs. So v'amai. So I don't understand Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is saying that we have a difference between the forelegs and the hind legs. Even if the animal could have theoretically picked up one of its forelegs in the case of a chamor, or one of its hind legs in the case of a sus, but nevertheless, that leg is still contributing to carrying the weight of the zah. Lav, shouldn't we therefore conclude, Mishum de Amrina, we say, Mesayeh Ein Bo Mamish, that even though that leg is contributing, but it's only contributing, it's only assisting, because the animal could have carried the weight without that leg. Amar Rav Ashi. And now we are going beyond the confines of Mesechta Zavim to bring other proofs for Rav Chisda Mesayeh Ein Bo Mamish. Shafanan Nami Tanina, I learned in a Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, oh, it's a brisa, sorry. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Raglov Achas Ala Kli. Okay, we're talking now about a Kohen who does the avod in the Beis Hamikdash in the Azara, must have his feet on the ground of the Azara, no socks. Now, what happens if one of his feet is on top of a utensil? And it's only the other foot that's directly on the ground of the Azara. Here's an alternative case of Rabbi Eliezer. Raglo Achas Ala Evan. One of his feet is standing on a stone. The ragel achas al ritzi only has one foot that's directly on the floor. The ritzvas azara. And now the question is, if the kohen did the avoda, is he considered that he's standing on the azara? Roim, we check it out. Kol she'ili notel akliti notel heaven. Let's try to do an experiment. What would happen if we remove the utensil or the stone? He's yachol lamad al raglo achas. Can he still hang himself on one foot, so to speak? He's then avodasuk shira. Why? Because then his weight is being held by that leg that is directly on the ground of the azorvim lav. But if he's going to fall off his feet because he's only got one foot to stand on, is avodasuk psula. Vamai, and the Gemara asks the following question. All right, let's say he's able to stand up on one foot. And we said that the avod is kshera. Hakam esayeh ba'adi adodi. But he's certainly getting aid and assistance in carrying his weight with the other foot that is on top of a kli. That's also participating in carrying his weight. Okay, you can remove that kli and he won't fall to the ground. Lab mishum damrina misayeh ein bo mamish. It must be that we have to conclude that we don't consider assistance as being significant in halacha. Omer Avinu Afanan Nami Tanin, again, another brice as far as the avoda of a kohen. Now, the avoda of the kohen gadol requires that when he shechts the animal, the zevach, he has to be mekabel the dam in what's called a mizrak, which is being held in his right hand. If he receives the blood in his left hand, then it's possible. And the Braisa says, Kibil biyamin usmol misayato. So imagine, he's holding on to the Mizrak with his right hand, and he's being makabal adam, but his left hand is situated underneath his right hand to help him hold the weight. Is nevertheless, avodasuk shira. Mamai, why is that so? How come sayyeb adi adodi? His left hand is also contributing to the Kabbalah Saddam. Love, don't we have no choice? But Mishum Damridim is Sayyembo Mamish. See, it's interesting that this Gemara assumes that the left hand, in terms of Kabbalah Saddam of the coin, is a posel. That itself undermines the avoda. And the question is there a Kabbalah Saddam in his left hand? If you hold Mesayeh Yeshbo Mamish, then he was Makabal with his left hand. The fact that he was also Makabal with his right hand, that's not going to salvage it because the Avoda in your left hand is a posel. But if I hold Mesayeh Yeshbo Mamish, then there was no Kabbalah Saddam in his left hand. Shma Mina, the Gemara accepts this as both of these proofs, that of Ravashi, as well as that of Ravina, as conclusive evidence that Messiah ain bo mamish. And in the case of the leg of the animal, we're also going to apply this principle of Messiah ain bo mamish. And therefore, if we could determine that the animal doesn't need that leg to stand on, then there won't be any tumas medris. Omar Mar, the Gemara asks the following question. Ze yochol v'ze yochol. Right, we have a shita of Rabbi Meir that if each one of them could have done the malacha himself, is nevertheless, Rabbi Meir is mechayev. Just one second. Ze yochol v'ze yochol. And Rabbi Meir says, Yochayev, right? This was the case that Rabbi Yehuda identified as Shnayim Shasu, that they're both Patur, because each one could have implemented the Malach independently, and this is a very strange way of doing the Malach. But Rabbi Meir doesn't have the Patur of Shnayim Shasu. Iboilahu, according to Rabbi Meir, I have a Sofek. Be'inon Shir Lezeh V'Shir Lezeh, O Dilma Shir Echa Lekula. What happens if the two of them are carrying a grogeris worth of foodstuff? So there's only one shear. Now, if each one is doing a malacha, and each one is chayav for his malacha, then each one should be carrying a shear, but there's only one shear for the two of them. Or maybe we should say no, that they're both participating in one malacha, and we don't split it up into two people. We view it as one joint effort, and the one shear is enough. So here we have a machlokes between Rav Chisda again and Rav Hamnuna, like we had earlier. Chadomar shear is lezeh, shear lezeh. One is mekil, and he says no, unless we have two grogerets, so that each one is chayef for carrying out a grogeret's worth of food, then no one's going to be chayef. V'chadomar shear echa lekulam. It's enough that you have one grogeret, and both of them together, in a case of zeh yochol, v'zeh yochol, according to Rabbi Meir, of course, Achayev. Omra Papish made the Rav Havana Nami Tmina. Rav Papa says, I have a Mishnah. And again, we're going back to Masechta Zovin, and that's going to prove conclusively that all you need is one shear for both of them. Hoy Yoshev al Gabi Amita. V'arba Talisos Tachas Ragle Amita. Tmeos. So you have four shawls, four garments that are placed underneath four legs of a bed, and the zav is lying on the bed. All four shawls are tmeos. When they say eino yochol lamadol shalosh, because the couch could not possibly carry the weight of the zav if it didn't have all four legs. So the question of Papa is vamai liboy shir zival azeh. Vishir Ziva Lazer. Now, what we have is the weight of the Zav. Now, in order for something to contract Tumas Ziva, it has to carry the weight of the Zav. But here we're going to divide up the weight into four different partners, so to speak. Because each leg of the bed is carrying one quarter of the weight of the Zav. So how could all four of them be Tmeos? Ella, the answer is that in this case, where we need all four legs to carry the weight, it's considered that all four legs together are carrying the weight of the Zav. So we're not going to require that each one of the legs individually is responsible for carrying the weight of the Zav, but at all four in tandem, as one entity, as one unit, are carrying the weight of the Zav, and that's called Shir Echad L'Kulam. Now another proof. Amar of Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Afanan Tanami Tanina, I also have a Mishnah later on in Masechta Shabbos to prove this. Tzvi Nichnas Lebayis. So you've had a deer that entered into the house. Vinal echad befanav, and one locked the door, closed the door in such a way that the tzvi, this deer, is now captured. Is chayav, is chayav. No, lushneim. What if two of them together closed the door? Is pturim. And why are they pturim? Because this is a case of zeyachol v'zeyachol. Either one of them himself could have, on his own, locked the door. What about lo yachol echad linol? If, let's say, the lock is very heavy and they need both of them to close the door, then chayovim. And this reflects the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara asks, Amai, why in this case should both of them be chayov? There's only one deer inside the house. So who captured the deer? Okay, both of them had to contribute to do so. It was a joint effort on the part of both of them. So we're going to say each one is chayev. Li boy sheared seid lezev, sheared seid lezev, which required that there are two deers in the house, so that each one is chayev for capturing, for trapping that deer. Lav mishum damrin sheir echa lekulam. It must be that all you need is one shear, and they're considered acting together with one maisa tzeda. Omer avina afanana mitnina, hashutvim sheganvu v'tovchu chayovim. So two people stole an animal together and they slaughtered it together. They're both chayev. They're both chayev. What's called dalid vehei for shchita of a stolen avamai liboy shir tvichol azeh v'shir tvichol azeh. Each one should be chayev only if he slaughtered an animal. But they only slaughtered one animal between the two of them. Lav mishum it must be the amrinin shir echad lekulam. That when they do together one action. And one shchit in this case. They're both chai for the shchit of one animal. V'yomarav, Ashi, afanana mitnina. I could also prove this from an additional braisa that says that shnaim shotziu kana shel gardi chayovim. Two people are carrying a weaver's reed. And they're both chai for carrying it. Now, there's only one reed between the two of them. So how could they be chayev, both of them, for one reed? V'amai liboy shir hotzah lezeh v'shir hotzah lezeh. Each one should be carrying a reed on his own. La mishum de'aminon. It must be that shir echa l'kulam. That all we need is one shir. They're both considered working together on one shir. Omalei rav acha b'rei de rav le rav ashi. Dilma. I don't accept this proof. Why? De'isbe k'dei levashel beitza kala lezeh. U beitza kala lezeh. Maybe the reed is long enough that if we cut it in half, it could be used as fuel, and each half would be sufficient for cooking an egg. So he says, "Imkain lishma'inan kana di alma." Then he should have just mentioned the word kana, and we'd have assumed, okay, it's a reed that you can cut in half. Maishna de gardi, why does this price specifically hone in on a weaver's reed? Apparently, it must be telling me that there's only one small amount here, and you can't cut it in half. Vidilma de ispe kide larog mi pela ze. Ukide larog mi pela ze. Maybe there's enough here that if you use the two ends of this object, each one has a shear to weave a mapa. I said a mipa. I'm sorry, I correct myself. A mapa. That happens when I'm pressured to try to get. Ela mehal lekel mishmamina. So this is not a proof, but we have plenty of ample proofs from all the other rayas that. Shir echad lekulam. Tani tana kamei de Rav Nachman, and we learned in a brice in front of Rav Nachman, shnayim shotziu kone shel gardi pturim. Right, two people that carried a weaver's reed are potur. And the reason for this is because it's zeh yachol v'zeh yachol. Each one could have carried it himself. And we're holding now that in a case of zeh yachol v'zeh yachol, is even Rabbi Yehuda says you're potur, but Rabbi Shimon is mechayev. He says you're chayev. This doesn't make any sense. I mean, Rabbi Shimon was always the one who said that you're potur. Klape laya, the opposite should be true. Ela ema chayovim Rabbi Yeshua poter. We should switch around the names over here, and we should assume that adarabba, it's Rabbi Yehuda who would say you're chayev, and Rabbi Shimon would say you're potter, because Rabbi Shimon never accepted the principle of, I'm sorry, Rabbi Shimon applied the principle of Shnayim Shasu straight across the board in all cases, even in the case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol. Rabbi Yehuda holds in the case of Zeyachol v'Zeyachol, there Shneim apturim. Even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. And then we're going to say that in the case of Zeh Eini Yochel V'Zeh Eini Yochel, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say Yochayu. And that's how we're going to be Miyashiv this price. Just want to point out that according to the final Maskona, after the Gemara sort of Klap Elias switches it all around, we have to reinterpret the Metzius of this Konesh Al-Gardi, this weaver's reed. And we're not talking about what we thought was a very light reed that each one could have carried himself, but rather we're talking about an especially heavy reed, and therefore it's a case of Zeini Yochel v'Zeini Yochel. And here's where Rabbi Yehuda would say in the case of Zeini Yochel Yochayev, both of them are Chayev, whereas according to Rav Shimon, who he has the most extreme and broad scope definition and application of Shnayim Shasu Pturim, and therefore he holds its potter. And that's how we're going to rewrite this brisa. The Mishnah now says, Hamotzi Ochlim is pachus mikishir b'kli. So he has less than a shear of a grogeres inside the kli, and he carries them. Potaf al kli. Okay, I understand why he's not chayev on the food stuff. It's less than a shear of grogeres. Why is he pot on the kli? Shakli tafelo, because we have a principle called bittel, and he's not interested in relocating the kli. Has no need for the kli out there. He's just using the kli to transport and transfer the contents of the kli. Esachai b'mita, so too, if he carries a live person in a bed, he's potter af ala mita. Now, the reason he's potter on the chai is because of a principle that we're going to study tomorrow, mitzvah kol achai, no seyes atzma. But why at least isn't he chayv on the inanimate bed? Shamita tfeilolo. Because again, he has no interest in the bed being carried out. He's just using the bed to carry the person who's on the bed. But es hameis b'mita, if it's a corpse and there's no principle of achai no seyes atzmo, then he's chayv. And he's chayv in this case for carrying the corpse. It's an inanimate object, and for that hotzah, he will be chayav. V'chein kizayis min amis. Even if he's not carrying the entire corpse, but he's carrying amount of a flesh of the dead animal, such that it would be metami tumas oil, and that gives the chashivas for melechas hotzah. But as far as tuma sheretz is concerned, the minimum size of a sheretz has got to be a lentil's size, and then he's chayev in Shabbos, and Rabbi Shimon poter. Now this Rabbi Shimon is going to be the subject of our discussion tomorrow, which is called a melacha she'ena tzricha legufa. Okay, then, so let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're here on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis, three lines up before the end of the Amud, and we're going to start tomorrow with Tanur Rabbanan.